Okay, we're on that phase on the days. The Mishnah says that if two Eidim testify against the Nidon that he's Chayv Golus, he killed someone b'shogeg, the Eidim do not get sent into Golus, but rather get Malkus. Minani Mili, Omrei Shlokish, the Omar Kro Hu Yonus, El Achas Ha'orim. And the Gemara dashes the extra word Hu, which is a Miu, to exclude Hu V'lo Zomimim. This whole sugya is predicated on the assumption that we could actually send the Eidim into Golus. If not for this special Gzeres HaKosev, this Yalfusa, that this derivation, we would send the Eidim into Golus under the law of Kasher Zoma. What I'd like to point out to you is that the Ritva is not happy with this. And this you'll see on the page that I gave you. It's the second paragraph on your page from the Otzer Mefarshei Talmud. The reason why I'm using the Otzer Mefarshei Talmud is because it has a lot on one page, so it makes it easier for me to photocopy. So the Ritva quotes a Gemara later on, we'll see it in just a few minutes, that Eidim Zomim did not pay kofar because kufra kapar. So let's go over this. So two Eidim testified against the Nidon that his ox gored and killed a person. And the punishment, again in inverted commas, we'll see what that word punishment means in this context, but the punishment for the crime of not being careful, being negligent about watching your ox, which is a major animal that does tremendous damage, and as a result somebody lost his life, is that you have to pay kofar. Kofar is a kind of a payment, we'll see exactly what it is a little bit later on, which according to one opinion is called a kapara. Now let's just try to summarize, if we can, just give like an overall sketch of what it means to call a payment, to classify it as a kapara. Okay? So the first implication of a kapara is the simple, straightforward interpretation, which means that it's there, its purpose, its goal is not compensation, as it is in the normal case of damages. If my ox gores your cow, then I pay you to compensate for the loss of your cow. Here in this case, you can't compensate for the loss of human life, but rather you pay a kofar, which means a kapara, which means a way, a means of achieving atonement. And this is the way the Torah sets up the atonement, the kapara, for Shor Shaharag Es Ha'adam. Because my ox killed a person, I need a kapara, that's what I'm going to pay. Again, we'll get into the details, how I pay and what I pay later on. But the point is that this sets up kofar in the case of Shor Shaharag Es Ha'adam as a very unique payment in the overall framework of different payments. It's not, as we said, compensation, but rather it's a penalty, and the purpose, the goal of that penalty is to achieve atonement for the crime, which means kapara. So far, so good? So the Gemara says the following, that if two witnesses testify against the Nidon that his ox killed a person, and therefore he, the owner of the ox, is obligated to pay kofar, the Eidim did not suffer that same punishment. We don't apply the principle of the boomerang theory of Kasher Zoma. And why? Because kofar is a kapara. If kofar is a kapara, the Gemara says, then there's no din of Kasher Zoma. Why? I want you to think about that question. Let it sink in a little bit, because we're going to have to come back to it. But suffice it to say that the bottom line is that if the nature of the payment is kapara, then it doesn't lend itself to the principle of what?
Hazam,
of Kasher Zoma. We can't apply Kasher Zoma in the case of this unique kind of payment, which is not your classical payment of what? Of compensation, but rather it's a kapar. So the Ritva now doesn't understand what was the Havamina to send the Eidim into Golus. The Ritva says the following. Lama on the third line, Lama Amru Khan, Shiesh Lakayim Onish Golus, the Eidim Zonu, send the Eidim into Golus, Kadesha Tia Lahem Kapara. The whole purpose of Golus is Kapara. Now, let's just think about this. When we say that Golus is a Kapara, it's a little bit confusing, a little bit complicated. Please, this is for you. Okay? Not mine. I have the original. So in the case, you have a seat? If not, grab a chair. Just bring it over. In the case of Golus, we need something more than just exile in order to clinch the kapar. What else do we need? Does anybody know? Again, this is something that we're anticipating down the line in the second parak of Masechta Matos. What else achieves or clinches the kapara on behalf of the inadvertent murderer? The death of the Kohen Gadol. Excellent. So keep in mind that when the Ritva says that Golus is the kapara, I would rewrite the text here, if I could, and I would say it's a stage, it's the first stage in kapara. But there's a two-stage process, the beginning of which is Golus, you know, get yourself over to the Eir Miklat, and the second stage, which completes the kapara, is the death of the Kohen Gadol. The question would be, if the Kohen Gadol died before the Rotzeach went into the Eir Miklat, would the Rotzeach then be exempt from Golus? And the answer is no. But again, that's a sugya later on. Why? Because you need both stages in the process. You need number one in that sequence, that the Rotzeach go into Golus, and number two, the Kohen Gadol die. The fascinating thing is, how long will it take till the Kohen dies? It could take 50 years, it could take 5 minutes. We don't know. In both cases, it clinches the kapara.
What happens if the person dies before the Kohen Gadol dies?
Yeah, and then the Gemara says we have to bury him in the Eir Miklat. It's unbelievable. We talk about burial as being part of the kapara. In the case of a Rotzeach B'Shogeg, it's feasible that burial is so critical to his kapara that if he doesn't get buried in the Eir Miklat, he comes up to Shamayim with the Avera of Ritzicha B'Yado. But again, that's way far ahead of us for now. So let's just get the Ritva's question. The Ritva lays down the following premise: that when a Rotzeach goes into Golus, what's the essence of that Golus? What's its purpose? What's its goal? It's Kapara. And the Ritva therefore goes on to say that since, you know, there's a whole syllogism here, there's a whole, you know, if A equals S and B equals S, therefore A equals B, you know, there's a whole, so let's go through the trilogy. He has it like this. The Gemara establishes that the Edom Zomamim, if they testify against Reuven that his ox killed a man, do not have to pay kofar. Why don't they have to pay kofar? Because kofar is kapara. Kapara does not apply to someone who did not commit that particular crime. Okay? So if you say that the punishment fits the crime, I'm not sure that that's true, according to Halacha. Because in Kasha Zomaham, it's not necessarily the case that the punishment fits the crime. But in the case of kapara, the kapara must fit the crime. To the exclusion of Edom Zomim, their crime was perjury. The kapara of Golus, well, let's go back to the original case, the kapara of paying for the life of the victim who was killed by the ox, and that's called a kapara, that doesn't fit the crime of perjury. Says the Ritva, then by analogy, the punishment of Golus, since its essence is kapara, doesn't fit the crime of perjury, and therefore the Edom Zomim should certainly not go into Golus. The truth be told, I'm more fascinated by his answer than by his question. Let's read his answer very meticulously. He quotes here the Ramban and the Tosfos. I didn't see this in Tosfos. He says, Shani Golus She'eno kapara mamish. Okay, so first of all, the Ritva alters the premise that he was operating with in his kasha, which you always have to do in the Teretz, and he says, wait a minute, this is not true. What I told you is only half true. I mean, Golus is a kapara, but it's much more than a kapara. And in fact, the essence of the kapara, the real kapara, is where? Is the Mises Kohen Gadol. So in the relationship between A and B, A being the Golus and B being the Mises Kohen Gadol, which one is really playing the primary role of creating, of engendering kapara, going through the struggle? Yeah, this is just mathematics. We're not getting into smarter.
You need both of them. How can you say it's
you need both of them, but the Golus now is going to be subsumed under a different category. What's the alternative category if I don't call Golus a kapara? What is it? It's an onesh. So basically the Ritva's answer, according to Ramban, is going to now reclassify in a different classification the Golus experience. The Golus experience now is called an onesh, Once I classify as an onesh, what am I allowed to do now?
Kashazon.
Correct? No, but what about kapara? So he says that the kapara really adheres in what? Misas koin gadol hu shemechaperes olam. I'm adding a little word of my own here when he says hu shemechaperes olam, means that's the ikar kapara, if you can say that. The real kapara is not the goal. In fact, well, again, we're going to study this is a profound sugya, why the death of the koin gadol engenders kapara. That's going to be a big, big sugya later on. But be that as it may, if the goal took place for just 1 minute and the koin gadol died a minute later, and there's so much power in the death of the Kohen Gadol, as we'll see later, to engender a kapara for the, on behalf of the, all the Rotskim, all of them. It's a very communal kind of kapara for all Rotskim. So therefore the Golas plays a secondary role in terms of its kapara element.
So in this case,
okay?
usually
the Onish is the only means to a kapara. Here Golas has a double personality to it. On the one hand, it's a kapara, but on the other hand, it's an onish. And so far as it's an onish, it lends itself to which din? Kashazama, if not for the pasuk huyonis. Okay, so wait, I want to just see the whole picture because there's something very fascinating coming up. He says, v'teida shahari im yotza chutz l'tchum nerak. This is an interesting idea. According to the Ramban, quoted by the Ritva, the fact that the Rotseach puts his life on the line, in other words, he can be knocked off, his block can be knocked off as soon as he steps out of the boundaries of the Ir Miklat, means that the Golas experience is not a kapar. It doesn't wipe away his sin. He's still very much a Rotseach. To such an extent that the Golas really affords him with a certain protection, and more than a kapara, it's a protection against whom? The Gol Adam, right? The person who wants to avenge the death of his relative. And all this, according to the Ritva, in the name of the Rabbi, is going to be applicable to whom? Transferable to whom? To the Eden Zonim. Now, the Dovar HaMosur LeBezdin Hu LaHaGloso. What does that mean?
Based on has the authority to determine whether it was even...
Okay, authority to what? I need a word here.
To determine whether it was even
shogeg
or not.
To enforce the law.
To enforce.
That's the key concept here. That doesn't apply to kapara. If we go back to the drawing board and we ask ourselves what defines a kapara. So the first definition of kapara is that it's not compensation. Its essence is atonement. The second definition of kapara is that it is, what word am I looking for? It is optional. It's not mandatory. Again, we know from last night's lecture from Rabbi Zweig that some people actually shoot themselves in the feet, right? In the foot. So a person decides he doesn't want to avail himself of the opportunity to achieve kapara. That's his decision and he's going to stew in it. But we, Beis Din, cannot enforce the law of kapara. Every onesh in your long list of onshim is enforceable. And Beis Din is in charge of that, not in the case of kapara. So let's see. What about golus? Is golus enforceable?
No.
Golus is enforceable. They can actually force him to go into golus. Now, if he decides to leave, you know, he's endangering himself, but we can force him to go back in. What does that prove? If kapara equals what? Equals non-enforceable, and yet in the case of golus, it's enforceable. What does that prove about golus? It doesn't equal a kapara, right? This is the whole logic of the ritual. Then he goes on. He says, "Mashein kein bekofer she'ein memashkino." So when it comes to kofer, Bezdin doesn't have the power to enforce the law. Mashkin means they can't even confiscate his possessions for this payment. The lakach, and therefore, once having subsumed golus under this category that's not kapara, we'll call it mitzas onesh, mitzas kapara, but it's enforceable, and it's also protection. Hayinu svurim. What does hayinu svurim mean? We would have half a meter was if not for the pasuk sheze yigle. I know why he says ze. He means elu. Means the two edu. Now look at the next sentence. V'ya'amod bi'oso sofik shel harigah. What does that mean?
The
Goel Adam would be able to kill them, essentially.
Who's Goel Adam? The Goel Adam of the Nidal? Could it be? As we say in Hebrew, Hayitochen? That doesn't make a bit of sense. The so-called Rotzeach is alive and well. And you're going to tell me that his relatives are going to avenge what? His death?
What about the Nirtzach?
What?
What about the Nirtzach? Or was there no Ritzicha?
Well, we don't think there was a Ritzicha. We don't know there was a Ritzicha. You know, you're asking what about the dead body? You know, we have to do forensic medicine here, but leave that on the side. Let's say the body is not here, or we'll find another Rotzeach, or whatever, whoever the candidates for Ritzicha. I'm sorry if I'm not looking in this direction, just so my, you know, my neck is hurting me. I apologize. But do you hear the... So who is it that places the life of the aid into jeopardy? Which means, by the way, what does that mean? Itachlis, what does it mean, practically speaking, that the life of the witness is in danger? If he does what, the witness? If he steps out of the boundaries of the Yermichla?
Maybe he's aiding the attractive girl. Maybe they're aiding themselves that are the girl.
What do you mean? I don't get it. There are two Aiden that are going into the Yermichla. What, they're killing themselves?
No, they're
Aiden Sheker. They're the Aiden Sheker on the Aiden. They're living now in the Yermichla. They step out of the bounds of the Yermichla, they get zapped. Who's killing them? Again, look at the language. He says clearly, V'yamod bi'oso sofik shal ariga. But who's going to...
They can't leave until the Kohen Gadol dies.
No, that's true. They can't leave till the Kohen Gadol dies. That's 100% true. But what does it mean? Shehem omdim bi oso sofik hariga.
Given the punishment,
you know, we're worried about their safety also.
You tribute.
So I'll tell you what I think. I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if it's right or not. I think it's right. The Rambam says, I wrote it. You may be able to see my chicken scratch on the side. It's a Rambam Perkei Milchus Edus Sof Halacha Yud. The Rambam says, I'm sorry, this is a mistake on my part. It should be Perek Hey Mehilchos Rotzeach. Sorry, you can make that change. Okay. The Rambam says in the fifth Perek of Hilchos Rotzeach that if the Rotzeach steps out of the Yer Miklot, if anybody kills him, they're guiltless.
They're guiltless.
Ein lo dam, meaning the Goel Adam. Again, I don't know what word to use because there's so many shittas in this Rambam, but let me use the word is encouraged to kill him. Okay, again, that's a very iffy term here. Anyone else, if he takes the law into his hands and kills the Rotzeach outside of the Miklat, he's totally guiltless. He's clean. He's free of any punishment. What do I gain from that Rambam? I mean, why do I quote this Rambam to you now?
Because now anybody could go after that.
Because this might solve the problem of the Ritva as far as the Eden Zom is concerned. And the Halami that the Eden Zom have to go into Golis, and the Ritva goes a step further. And he says that the Eden Zom now are vulnerable in the same Sufik Ritzicha, Riga, somebody could kill them. Who's killing them? Anybody could kill them. There is no din of Goel Adam. Notice that preferential treatment or status of a Goel Adam doesn't exist in the case of Eidim. Their relative didn't die.
But someone else could think.
But somebody else, I think, could be. Okay, that's the fiat here, Stein.
Vigilante is what you're talking about.
What, you mean like Hanon Pogumbo kind of thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure if the exact... Yeah, okay.
Can he be a bounty?
I don't know enough about vigilantes.
Can he be a bounty?
They're so important. You're talking about someone...
Probably could get paid for it.
You're talking about someone who's so upset by the mice that they
pay. Maybe.
That even if they had no gears to...
Maybe you're right, Sam. I don't know. Anyway, that's just Lefia Nia's night. I was very enamored, or my fancy was captured by this statement of the Ritva. The Akrichen is kaper b'misas kohen gadol. So the misas kohen gadol has a kapar power not only for Rotzdim in this Havamin, but also for Edim Zomamin. Okay, fine. Good. Now, Rabosai, let's see, on page 2, I just want to see, yeah. So page 2, I have the Ramban for you in the original. And then we want to move on. Okay, then so if you know, at your leisure, if you have a chance, you go through the Ramadan. Is there anyone who didn't get a page? I have an extra one. Going once, going twice. All right. Now, Rabosai, we're going to pick up the Gemara Omar Ula. Do you have it? The Gemara that I'm skipping now, we did last week already. Omar Ula. Remez li edim zomin ator minayim. And what does that mean? You know, literally it means find me an allusion, some sort of hint in the Torah to the parsha of edim zomin. So the Gemara right away jumps to that. Remez leidim zomim v'aksiv asisim lo kashu zomam. It's a pasuk in Chumash. It's a parsha in the Torah. Ela remez leidim zomim shalokim in a Torah minayim. Rashi fills us in here. Shalokim in a Torah. Rashi says shalokim eidei ben grusha o eidei golus. Shepatram hakasu midin azoma, from the literal application of azoma. So the Torah suspended the law, the boomerang theory of azoma. Minayin shem lokim. Now Rashi already is bothered by a question that the Gemara is going to ask at the end of the sugya. Ulakame parak. Later the Gemara is going to ask, "Tepuk lemilo sana," because you violate a law. And what's the punishment for violating a law? Malchus. So, in other words, in Rashi's mind, it seems like a simple approach to say the following. That the Torah used Kasher Zomam as the first position. That's the primary way we should go about punishing the Eidim. But if that doesn't work out, then we still have the default position, which is the universal halacha. You get Malkus, you get 39 lashes for violating a law of the Torah. And the Torah says, L'osana b'riachet shoker, you're not allowed to perjure yourself, so you get Malkus for that. So Rashi doesn't understand the premise of Ula's question. Why does Ula have to find a remez that Edim Zomim, who did not lend themselves to the literal application or implementation of Kasher Zomim, they get Malkus? Of course they get Malkus, they violated Losan. Okay, so that's going to lead us to Lav Shembo, Maisa, and the whole discussion. Fine. Dichsiv. The Torah says, "Vitzdiku es hatzadik v'hirshiu es harosha." Okay. We have here on the side the Torah. Or I don't know if you have that in your Gemara. He gives you the whole pasuk. In Dvarim Chafei, it says, "Ki yirim pein anoshim v'nikshu el mishpat u'shvatum v'itzilu es hatzadik v'itzdiku es hatzadik v'hirshiu es harosha." So there's a riv. There's a dispute between two litigants. That's what it would seem like. Riv Bein Anoshim. We've seen phrases like this throughout Parshas Shoftim. It's not new to us. And then the Torah says that as a result of the judgment, the Shiput, is Vitzdiku es hatzadik v'hirshiu es harasha. And the very next pasuk, which he also quotes here in the Torah, is V'hoya im bin hakos harasha. V'pilu ha-shofi v'ko. This is called Malchus. So now the question arises, what's the relationship, the juxtaposition between these two psukim? In the first pasuk, the Torah says that as a result of this riv, Bezdin was decided who is righteous, and they established the righteous person as such, and then who is the evildoer, and established him as such, and now all of a sudden we're giving out Malchus. I mean, why? I mean, there's a dispute between two litigants. I mean, we have to give out Malchus? Yo, Reuben is Tovea Shimon $1,000. So Shimon denies that he owes him. We find out that there's evidence in favor of supporting Reuben's claim. So we force Shimon to pay up $1,000. That means we have to put him down on his knees and beat him up? I mean, why? V'hayim v'dakos ha-rasha b'shur. So the Gemara asks the question as a rhetorical question. B'shur v'tzdikos ha-tzadik v'shiyos ha-rasha. Therefore, it follows that v'hayim v'dakos ha-rasha and v'pilu ha-shofi l'fonav and so forth and so on. It doesn't make any sense. I would ask another question here, just to enhance the difficulty in understanding this pasuk that Ula is quoting. We're not talking about a tzaddik in a rasha. You know, there's a litigation here. Do we always have to assume in a litigation that there's a tzaddik in a rasha? I mean, there's someone who's chayav and someone who's patur. But I'm not sure if there's a tzaddik in a rasha. What did he say?
Two litigants, one is right and one is wrong.
Yeah, but it's hard to call one tzaddik and one a rasha. I mean, just because I lost the case, does that mean I'm a rasha? I mean, If I'm a Russia, then I would be Pusilaitis. We don't say somebody's Pusilaitis because he lost the litigation in court. So the whole pasuk is what is that?
Yeah, riv. It's a fight. It's when it started a fight.
Yeah, but the word riv here doesn't mean a fight. The word riv means a dispute. What do you have an article there? What does he say? He says fight.
No, I have just it's the Hebrew.
Oh, what does it say in the Hebrew?
What?
For the word riv, what does he says riv? He probably doesn't even translate the word. Okay, let's go on. So how do we unravel the mystery of this pasuk? So the Gemara says the following. That there's a whole scenario going on in this pasuk. Ela edim shershiva satzadik. You have to know the story. Two witnesses testified against a righteous person that he's a Russian. Notice they accused him falsely. How do we know they accused him falsely? Because asu edim akrinim v'tzdiku satzadik to beikara. Because the second pair of edim testified, and as a result of that, we determine that the righteous person is righteous. We establish him as righteous. V'shavinu lahani rishoyim. And who now is established as a Rasha? The first two Adim, the Adim Zonim. Then what do we do? Vayabidak also Rasha. Then we're going to apply the punishment of what? Of Malkus.
So this was the illusion?
This is the Remez to Adim Zonim. So is this really a Remez? If you'll take a look on the second side of your page, there's a Pnei Yoshua here. The Pnei Yoshua says, Yesh L'dagdek, it's the third paragraph here, Amai Kori Le Remez. He says he doesn't understand why this is called a Remez. I mean, Rashi already explained that it doesn't make any sense that there was a Tzadik who became a Tzadik. Now, if you put the Pnei Yoshua on the side and you turn the clock back about 7 centuries, take a look in the Otzim Farshat Talmud, he quotes the Ramban in his Pirush al Torah. This is on the left side of your page, page 1, if you call it that. And the Ramban says the following. He says on the Pasuk, Ki yeh riv bein anoshim v'nikshol al-mishu shotfle al-derech kabolas raboseinu. Number 34. Shall Malkos hu b'chayvei alavim? That we get Malkus for violating the law. So ma'in lo b'riv asher bein shnei anoshim. The pasuk is describing a situation which precipitates Malkus. And why? Because it was a riv? Ha'ochel nevela b'beiso. Even if he eats nevela in his house, it's not a riv that took place in front of a court. And he gets Malkus. Well, it's orei asodeu. O karmo kalayim. He says, for every law that you violate, you get Malkus. I mean, you did in the privacy of your field, your home, wherever it was. And we're going to take you to court. There was Adam and Asro. We'll judge you in court and we'll give you Malkus. But what does that have to do with... What does Malkus have anything to do with a riv, a dispute between two litigants in a court? The ode, and furthermore, my time, what is the meaning of the phrase, v'tzdikos atzadik? We're making someone into a tzadik, and then we're going to give Malkus? Oh, the Yeshua's a rush, we're going to give him the Malkus. But what's the Tzdikos HaTzadik? A person ate Nevela, so we'll bring him to court, and we'll incriminate him, and then we'll give him Malkus. But there's no Tzdikos HaTzadik. Says the Ramban, Leficha, therefore, based on the fact that this pasuk has no meaning, in and of itself, it's straightforward, is Darshu B'Adim Zomim. Therefore, Chazal, P. Kabbalah, understood that this was referring to Adim Zomim. V'Yomar HaKosu. And the Torah is trying to convey ki kasher yir riv bein shnei anoshim v'nikshol al mishpat v'shavto al pishneim edim kasher tzivo achkei yatzdikus atzadik v'shus al rosha shalok v'shavishon v'oye ben akus rosha nucha shalo nucha l'kayim bo v'asisim lo kasher zomam lasos li'achiv. If we cannot apply kasher zomam literally, and then v'yazek kagon, one of the cases we cannot apply literally kagon she hey, idu al shu ben grusha, o eved, o mamzer, o sheidu all of sha'avar al echad ben alavim yilke arboim. So again, in the last case, we have a classical kasher zom. I don't even know why the Ramban felt compelled to add it.
Why does he want that together?
Say it again.
Why does he want that last one?
Yeah, I don't know why he feels compelled to add that. That's the classical kasher zom. But in any event, his whole list here is kasher zomim, meaning the kasher zomim here in this case is what? Is malchus. Oh, so now the Ramban is going to ask the question which we'll see in the Pnei Yoshua, but the Ramban was way before the Pnei Yoshua. I can't understand how the Pnei Yeshua didn't see this Rambam. The Afal Pisha Amru, even though the Gemara quotes Ula saying, Remez Liyedim Zomim Shalokim Minat Torah. What do you mean a remez? It's not a remez. There's no other way of interpreting the pasuk. It doesn't have any meaning unto itself. Eina kavana b'yomar rem. Don't misinterpret the word remez. She'eino rak derech hasmachta. Usually, where the remez is something that's rabbinic, and they hang it up on a peg. Here they find the verse, and it's not really pshat in the verse. He says that no, that's not what the word remez means. Elohu medrash gomur, or we could call it a drasha gemura. V'dino min haTorah. This is not a rabbinic law. This is a Doraisa, this is a Drasha Gemura, and we derive from the Pasuk. So this entire Pnei Yoshua here, which you'll see on the flip side of your page, really in essence captures the very essence of what exists already in the Ramban. Namely, that you cannot use this word remez, or misuse the word remez, and interpret it to mean that this is not the Pshat in the Pasuk. This is the Pshat in the Pasuk. There is no other Pshat in the Pasuk.
That's a very...
I'll tell you, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but there's a Gemara about Yichud. You know, the Issa Yichud is a man is not allowed to be alone with a woman in a locked place if she's not... if he's not allowed to have relations with her. So there the Gemara says, in Avot Zohar Kiddushin, the Gemara says, Remez le'Issa Yichud min haTorah minayin. So all of the Mefarshim jump on this. They look for a Remez, and yet they say it's min haTorah, which engenders a tremendous controversy about the nature of the Issa Yichud, whether Yichud is Doraisa, whether it's a rabbinic law. And on the one hand, the Gemara opens up with the word remez. On the other hand, it goes on and says, min haTorah. You know, how do you reconcile this?
Difference between a married woman and a
pnuya? Yeah, not a married woman, with a difference between an erva and a pnuya. It's lav dafka, again, in certain cases we're mekil, but... there are very, very few cases. In any event, you see that the word remez can sometimes mean a doraisa halacha. And here, both in the Ramban and in the Pnei Yoshua, the word remez is taken out of its general universal understanding. Instead of being interpreted as some sort of an asmachta kind of thing, where the Rabbanon found a little bit of a hint somewhere in the Torah, it's really the pshat in the pasuk.
Other than those two cases,
and I'd have to do a word search for that. Bar-Ilan could probably help. But what I want to say is the following: if this is pshat in the pasuk, then if somebody were to deny this pshat, you see, Shivan Panim LaTorah, right? We can look at a pasuk and give all the interpretations you could ever even imagine, right? But there is what we call Pshuto Shel Mikra. And Pshuto Shel Mikra has significance. I'll give you an example. Again, I don't want to get off on a tangent, but the Gemara at the end of Yuma says that in addition to the mitzvah of Tochacha, there's a separate mitzvah of Mecha. Mecha means that even if I know I can't have any impact on you, so my tochach is meaningless, but there is a halacha of protesting. And the Gemara is machalik between two types of isurim. If it's an isur that's mefurish b'kra, then you have to make a mecha. If it's not mefurish b'kra, then you don't have to make a... What other nafkaminas? Oh yeah, there's a nafkamina legabe psul rasha. For example, a rasha who brazenly, boldly, publicly violates a Torah law is called a mumar. And there are many different dinim that apply to a mumar. Again, in our day, it's more complicated because the 99.999% of people that we would classify as mumrim are tinoka shanishmum, they don't know the first thing. But if you found someone who is an absolute classical mumar, so there are different ways of becoming a mumar. I'm not going to go into that now. I'm not encouraging you to go down that path. But one of the ways is to boldly violate an isur. So the Gemara is mechalik, and this is brought down to Shavuot. That depends. If it's mefurish b'kra, then you become a mumar. If it's not mefurish b'kra, then you don't become a mumar. Well, for whatever reason. But I'm just saying that the status of something that's pshat is a greater status, and so this whole discussion is very fascinating. Okay. On. Let's go on in the Gemara. The Gemara says, V'tepukle, on the first of the wide lines, below Sada, why do you stand, you know, do somersaults in the air in order to come up with some sort of a pshat in the pasuk? What was the question that you were asking? What were you looking for? You're searching for a pasuk. What are you searching for a pasuk for? Well, every single lav in the Torah, you can ask me, you say, how do I know you get malchus? The answer is because you violated a lav. I mean, the Gemara later on is going to prove from Tosatsim Sharbatisha that every time you violate a lav in the Torah, you get malchus. So Gemara answers, Mishum Davi lav she'ein bo mas. Vechol lav she'ein bo mas, ein lokin olov.
Didn't the Mashiach know that?
Well, the truth is, I'm not sure that I know this, but I'll tell you why. Because Shmuel Dov, this is a gigantic machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, and Rabbi Yehuda actually holds that a lot of shame but mice you do get malchus for. So this Gemara is not assuming like Rabbi Yehuda, and the question is going to be, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what's he going to do with Vitzdikos HaTzadik? What's the purpose of that pasuk? What goal? What is it teaching them? And I have here a fascinating pshat. This I wasn't able to photocopy for you because he tells you in the footnote that it's in Rabbi Yerucham Perlau, who wrote a super commentary on the Rasag, Rabbi Sad Jigon. I have it; it's three volumes, but it's not something that's in Bar Ilan, so it's not easy for me to get a hold of it and photocopy it for you. Anyway, he says the following, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that lav shein bo ma'isa lo ken olav, hakosuv v'tzdikos hatzadik bo lo lamdeinu she'ein lo ken ela al edus sheker shoho ila lahatzdik ulaharshia. Okay, these two edim perjured themselves, and we proved it through hazam. Now we have to punish them. So we're going to punish them for violating losana, according to Rabbi Yehuda. What is the pasuk teaching me? That we don't always punish them for violating the law of losana. There's a proviso, there's a condition. It's got to be Eidus Sheker Shehoila Lahatzik Ularshia. Meaning, their Eidus is incriminating someone. And by proving and establishing them to be false witnesses, we establish the righteousness of someone who is accused falsely of being a Rasha. If your Eidus has nothing to do with being Marshia or Rasha, now being Matzdik and Tzadik through the Pasuk of Zoma, then you don't get Malchus. Does anybody here in the room recall that we had a discussion about this?
About the new moon.
Correct, excellent, beautiful, John. Then what about Eidus HaChodesh? Remember, Rabbi Akiva Eiger was of the opinion that if Eidei Chodesh become Eidim Zomim, then we have to give Malchus. And this created a whole Tararam. The note of the argument with Rabbi Akiva Eiger, he was of the opinion, no, that you can only give Malchus if it was the kind of Eidus that incriminates someone. The whole sugya really comes down to how to learn the pasuk v'tzdikos hatzadik according to Rabbi Yehuda, holds it ain't lav shein bo ma'isa lo ken olav. But I'm also, this is a fascinating sugi because I'll be right with you, because until Rabbi Yehuda steps onto the stage, the pasuk v'tzdikos hatzadik is coming to broaden the definition of malchus, meaning that the Torah is coming to be mechadish that even though losana is a lav shein bo ma'isa, therefore it doesn't incur malchus, in this case, like for example Ben Grush Meklusa, it will incur malchus. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the direction is reversed. The pasuk v'tzdikos hatzadik is not coming to expand malchus, to be mechadish malchus, but on the contrary, to restrict malchus, that even though you violated losana, you will not suffer malchus for violating this law, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, the lav shein bo ma'isa and lokanola, because it wasn't this kind of an Eidus. It's got to be an Eidus that can be classified as Vitzdikos Hatzadik
Vishyus. Maybe I'm stuck on semantics, but if we conclude that they're Eidim Zomim, why does that make the person who's right, why is he a Tzadik? Why is it that Tzadik?
Well, no, he's a Tzadik in this particular accusation. I don't know if I'm not checking his senses. What I'm saying is that as far as this accusation is concerned, he's a tzaddik. He cannot be incriminated as having done the crime that he was accused of doing.
Okay, so but it's the Aden Zomina they're the ones that who are culpable. They're bringing false testimony.
Right.
So why is because they bring false testimony prove that one person is tzaddik and another person is rasha? All it means is that they brought false testimony.
No, again, I think the word tzaddik. Maybe it's semantics, but it's important. The definition of a tzaddik here in this pasuk is someone who was accused of a certain crime and now has been vindicated, has been proven that he was not guilty of that crime.
That's all it proves. That's what it's tzaddik.
That's what the word tzaddik means. Tzaddik means that he's
tzaddik.
He's not a Russian.
We haven't proved his innocence.
Well, we proved his innocence.
We don't know.
Well, everyone is innocent until proven guilty. Everyone has a cheskas kashrus. If you are accused of a crime based on testimony, and that testimony doesn't pan out, it doesn't fizzle out, it fizzles out, then you are considered guiltless because every person has the right, the inalienable right to be guilty. It's one of the five, amendments to the Constitution. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So, Rav Ossai, here we have something very interesting. The Gemara classifies Edim Zomim as a lav she'ein bo maisa. Now, follow this. I'm going to give you what I think is a classical case of a lav she'ein bo maisa. It's Erev Pesach, and I have chametz in my attic. And I don't destroy the chametz. I don't sell it. I don't make bittul on it. I do nothing. Comes Pesach, or Erev Pesach, after the sixth hour, and I violate two lavim in the Torah, Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotz. That's a lav she'ein bo maisa. Why is a lav she'ein bo maisa? I did nothing. Again, if I bought chametz from you, that's a little different. If I took a dough, I added water, and I kneaded it, I created chametz, that's different. But if I have chametz in my possession, that's a lav she'ein bo maisa. But here, so let's go to the other extreme. The other extreme would be lav de chasima. What do? I get on the animal, and I harvest, I plow the field, and the animal is muzzled. So plowing the field with the animal is called a maisa. But in between the two would be Edom Zomim, because Edom Zomim doesn't just mean that they sat there, b'chibuk yadayim, as we said. What did the Edom do?
Gave testimony.
They gave testimony. Is that called a Maisa or is it not?
Well, it's Dibur a Maisa.
Right, that's the question. Is Dibur a Maisa or not?
Yeah, we would call it.
That's interesting. Shmuel raises the other question. So the very fact they came into the Beit, maybe that itself is a maisa. But that doesn't bother me. Why not?
It's the dibur. No, it's not the fact that they go.
Correct. The going to the court is only that's a heksher, right? That's only a preparatory stage, right? Max, what are you saying?
You came to even those dibur itself. Isn't you're creating a maisa agent? Isn't that creation?
So you for sure are on board that there is a maisa, right? That's a you're on my side.
But you combine
the Gemara is on the other side of the fence. The Gemara assumes that it's not a maisa; it's a lav she'ein bo maisa. But yet you've really created something. Like for example, in the case of those sachsom, instead of riding the animal, suppose I whistle, and the animal comes. Does that mean it's a lav she'ein bo maisa? The answer is that's also a maisa. And I'll tell you something else. If you take a look on your page here, if I can point this out to you, the Note of Yehuda has a Magid Mishnah. This is the last paragraph on page on what's in the numbers, page one. But the Magid Mishnah in Perek Gimel Mehilchas Schiras Halacha Beis, and if you research that Magid Mishnah by next week, I'll give you free. Something or other, I don't know what. If you guys, is there any pizza here in the neighborhood? Whole wheat? Kol lav shemishkachas bo maisa afilu lo asu maisa rak dibur hu loke. So if I call the animal, if I whistle to the animal, and the animal comes and threshes the field, and it's got a yoke on it, it's got a muzzle on it, then I get malchus for that. Why? Says the Magid Mishnah, because I could have violated the lav with a maisa. So what does that have to do with Eidus? Let's assume that Dibur is not a maisa. So the Yehuda asks the following question. He says, the Rambam says in the ninth parak of Hilchas Edus, that if a person knows how to speak, he's not mute, he's not an ilin, he's allowed to write his testimony on a piece of paper and send it into Beis Din. That's very similar to another concept that we have in Halacha, namely what? A shtar, right? It's very similar to a shtar. So again, as long as you're capable of speech, the Rambam says, you don't have to stand in front of the Beis Din and actually testify. And this has tremendous repercussions, la halacha, in terms of sending aiders from one part of the world to the other. I remember when the Soviet Union was still around, you know, they had a case where a man wanted to divorce his wife who was here in Israel, in the Beis Din, and it's a whole issue here about how to get testimony from there to here. I mean, so they had the witnesses write something on a piece of paper and send it. Again, there are also to dinim, but bottom line is the Rambam says that you can testify without divorce, with what? Ksiva. He says that ksiva is certainly considered a maisa.
More so than
divorce. Nobody has a doubt about ksiva. In other words, if you write two letters on Shabbos, you'll get Mises Bezdin. That's not called the Lav Shem Bo Maisa. Ksiva is a maisa, and that nobody questions. Oh, but the Magid Mishnah says that any law that could be violated by a maisa, and instead you violate it through what? Dibur. You get Malkus for that. And the proof is, the paradigm is Chasima, Lav de Chasima. You can violate Lav de Chasima through Dibur, and you get Malkus for that because you could have violated it through a Maisa. So I was wondering, if I own Chametz on Erev Pesach, I could have violated that through a Maisa. How? I could have bought Chametz, or I could have been Machametz and Esau. So why shouldn't I get Malkus even B'Shei V'Alta, said? But I think what he's saying is that the mice itself, that very mice that you did, I'm sorry, the very non-mice that you did here, in this case a dibur, it could have been a mice. In other words, the fact that I could have found a way of that's not what the Magid Mishnah means. Anyway, so look at his answer here. He says that there's a Rashi in Masechta Sanhedrin that says, Shiny Adim Zomimim, Hoil the Yeshno Biriya. What does that mean? And he's very excited in Odebiyud. He says, this is going to solve our problem. The reason why Adam Zomim could not get Malkus, if not for Vitzdikovus HaTzadik, it's a lot of shame about Maisa, even though they could have written down their testimony, but they only did Dibur, is because Adam Zomim is Biri'iyah. Hoil v'yeshnon Biri'iyah. So he adds a few words at the end. You see the last 10 words on the page? Maybe this is the clue. He says, She'ikar edusan, you have this if you want to underline this, al masherou oshamu, ure'iya ushmiya, ein behem maaseh.
They didn't see or hear anything.
Right, okay, great. That's okay. I was hoping that you would give me a minute before you would ask that question. But you have to see. Let's just get just step by step. You know, notwithstanding your kashi, which is the bomb kashi, but I just understand what we call taichverta. What are the words meaning? He's saying, I think, that the violation of Adam Zomim is not inherent in the ksiva or in the amira, the dibur, but rather in the re'ia or the shmiya. Just try to understand this. If, let's say they were telling the truth, John, let me leave your question out for just a moment. If they were telling the truth and they actually witnessed the crime and they're testifying to the effect that this crime took place, blah, blah, blah. So where is the Avera here? Where is the testimony? Let's call it testimony. Where's the Haggadah? Where's the Avis? It's in the Re'ia? It's in the Shmir? It's in the Haggadah?
There's my Ezer Shnei Achim
Shara,
who's in Chippa. Was it?
Oh, right.
So like, just by experiencing, by seeing the mice, that is the Avis. That's the Avon Limar. That just by being here at the same time, it's the witnessing that put the witnessing. It's not the telling you.
All right. So question. Max is referring to this Mishnah. If you take a look on that Vav Hamid Aleph, and the Sugya there. And this Tosis Lashu de Asisu on the bottom of Vav Hamid Aleph The thrust of this entire sugya is that Eidus begins with Re'iyah. Now, what does that mean, Eidus begins with Re'iyah? Again, Shmuel Dov, you're going to say, well, Re'iyah is just a hechsher. You know, I can't testify unless I see the crime. But it's more than that. The laws of Haggadah actually begin with Re'iyah. What's the nafkimino? When you need two witnesses, they have to form a unit. What's that called? A kat. What is the glue, the agent that joins them together? So it's Re'iyah. And the Re'iyah here has two different connotations. Number one, they have to have seen the act at the same time. So for example, if Reuven sees it first, and then he moves away from the window, and then Shimon looks and sees the end of the crime, whatever it might be, that's not enough. And number two, they have to see each other. So those two dimensions of Re'iyah, and in the case of Shmir, the same thing would apply, that they hear it together, that's what links them together into a kat.
She's connected to Eidus.
Yeah, let's say, for example, if I want to testify that Reuven commanded, you know, to Eidim to write a get for him and divorce his wife, whatever the case of Shmir is. So the point is that if Re'iyah is only a hechetimza, it's only a prologue, it's only a hechsher in order to set up the Eidus, then no dinim would be activated through the Re'iyah itself. The fact that the Re'iyah sets up dinim, which allows these two witnesses to form a unit and play the role as a kat, that indicates that the Eidus is not just the Haggadah. The Haggadah, of course, is critical and it's the clincher, but it's the Re'iyah itself. The Re'iyah itself is, if I could use a term from American football, I don't know how you'd say it in Australian football, but it's the kickoff. Is there such a phrase in where you come from, too? The kickoff. You know, in American football, you know, no, forget it. I'm not going to get anywhere here. Maybe you know about rugby or something. I don't even know what a rugby looks like, but there's a guy who applied for our Colwell for next year who apparently is one of the greatest rugby players. You know, when he went to college, he was a great rugby player. So, you know, we got to accept him to the Colwell because he's a great rugby player, right? I'm joking.
We'll be able to, like, explain.
Right. Then we need an explanation for it. He'll be able to demonstrate. Oh, by the way, if anyone here has a very good strap that I can borrow for next week, because I want to demonstrate Malchus. Yeah? Okay, take off. Okay, kick off. Anyway, so let's just summarize a few points that we made tonight, and then we see if we have 5 minutes to just go through the Sugya of Kofar. Number one, we made the point that there is an actual serious havamina that we would send two Eidim into Golus when they testify against the Rotzeach that he killed B'Shogeg. And not only would he go into Golus this Eid, but he would even be vulnerable to being killed. He would also need the final clincher of Mises Kohen Gadol in order to go out from the Ir Miklat. That's not to be identified with the concept of Kapara. And the proof of the pudding is, says the Ritva in the name of the Ramban, because in Kapara there's no enforcing. Bezdin can't enforce a Kapara. It's an opportunity. But here we can enforce Golas. Number two, we discuss the issue of Remez Li'edim Zoban HaTorah. In other words, in the cases where we cannot implement Kasha Zoman literally, like Ben Grush Bechalutz, we give Malchus, we look for a Remez. The Rishonim are very keen, the Ramban, that this is not just a Remez in the sense of an Asmata, but rather it is the Pshat in the Pasuk. And finally, we discuss this concept of a Lav Shein Bo Maisa with regard to Eidim Zomim. Now, we look at the Brice. Tana Rabban, you have this a second of the wide lines. Dalid Dvarim Nemru Eidim Zomim. Who can tell me what the word Brisa means, literally? Left out of the mission. And I say that here, not just because I'm, you know, treating you like five-year-olds, but because I want to stimulate your minds to ask a question. Tana Rabbanan, Dalid Dvarim Nemru Be'edim Zomim. So what's the magic number? Four. Number one. A Nasim ben Grushim Mechalutza. Number two, A Golan Lorin Miklot. Number three, A Meshalman Es HaKofer. And number four, A Nimkarin B'Evid Ivri. So what question should we ask ourselves? Why did the Mishnah limit it to two cases and the Braisa felt compelled to expand it to four cases? The subset of that question is there a Machlokis between the Mishnah and the Braisa? Then the Braisa goes off on a tangent a little bit. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amu, Af Ein Mishalmin Al Pi Atzma. This is another fluke in which Eidim Zomim and Kasher Zomim is different than all other kinds of payments. So let's say, for example, the payment of compensation in the case where I would, let's say, admit, if I would confess in front of a Beitin, maybe even in front of two Eidim, we have to know, that I borrowed $1,000 from you, I have to pay that up. In the case of Eidim Zomimim, if let's say the Eidim testify that in one court, and then before they get to pay up for the Zomim, for being found to be perjured, they end up in a different Bezdin, somehow they got out through the back door. They show up in the second Bezdin and they admit that in the first Bezdin they were tried and condemned as Eidim Zomimim. Now, by their own admission, they have to pay the $1,000, and Rabbi Akiva says they don't pay. And that's called knas. Knas is a payment that's not compensation, it's an extra penalty, and penalties, which are called knossos, have to be proven and established by the Beis Din, not through the normal mechanics of Hodas Baldin, of an admission. The admission will not operate to precipitate a chiv mamon in the case of Eidim Zomim, because Eidim Zomim is not mamon, it's a knas. Now, what do you say? I don't know anyone who disagrees with Rabbi Akiva, although I did find in the Otzer Mefarshei Talmud, he quotes Epsa Meiri that seems to maybe argue with this Rabbi Akiva, that there are Chachamim who argued with Rabbi Akiva. Right, but we don't know anyone actually who argues. So let's go through the four cases. Einim Karim, Ein Nasim Ben Grushim Ben Chalutza. The Gemara says Kin Amara. This we understand because the Torah says Vasisim Lo, and what does Lo mean? Lo Velo Lazaro. Ein Golin Lari Miklat. Who Yonos? Who Velo Zovimim? But the Ein Mishalvin is Hakofer. What's that based on? And again, make note of the fact that it's not mentioned in the Mishnah at all. Kufra Kasavri Kufra Kapara. That the nature of kofar is that kofar is an atonement, which means, by the way, can it be forced down his throat? Can he be compelled by the bezin to pay this? No. If it's a kofar, if it's kapar, excuse me, it means it's optional. He'd be well advised to do so. What happens? Let me ask you, what's the classical case of a kapara which is something that halacha of the Torah affords you with an opportunity to achieve kapara, and it could be very expensive, but the Torah doesn't force you to come forward and bring it? A karban. A man violates Shabbos Chashom B'Shoge, he's chayv chatos. Chatos is a kapara. It's not a punishment, it's not a compensation. Avail yourself of this possibility of kapara. If two Eidim were to testify against Reuven that he violated the Shabbos b'shogeg and therefore he's chayav a karban, would we apply to the Eidim the Kasher Zomim rule? What's the answer on both sides? Absolutely not, because what's the nature of the karban? It's a kapara. Well,
also in that case, Reuven knows, like he knows that it's a lie. He knows they didn't really buy that.
Correct. And
he
therefore
not do it.
Right. Right. He's not compelled, and we can't compel him to do it. He knows he didn't violate the crime. The whole story is it's a bluff. So it's interesting that when the Gemara says that Kofar is a kapara, Vahani Labane Kapara Ninu, we want to know, is that really true? Mantana Kufa Kapara, who's the Tana who maintains that Kofar is a Kapara? Rav Chizda, Rav Shmuel, Rav Yishmael, Binosha, Rav Yochum, and Brokeh. Tisanya V'nosan Pinja Nafsho, if my ox kills a person, I have to pay a Pinja Nefesh. Demei Nizak. According to Tana Kama, this Braisa, how do we evaluate, how do we shots up the amount of money he has to pay as a pidyon nefesh? We look at the nizak. How many years would he have lived? What was his work capacity? How much would he have paid per year? And so forth and so on. We calculate with a certain sum. and the Yarshim of this victim of the Nizak is going to collect that sum. That's called Kofar, that's called Pidyon Nefesh, according to the first Tana, the Tanakam. But Rabbi Shmuel ben Oshel, Rabbi Yochum ben Rokan Amir, Demei Mazik, the owner of the ox. The owner of the ox is still alive and well. How much is he worth on the market? Well, he's X number of years old, blah, 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 and we figure it out. So the Gemara assumes that if you're giving a pidyon nefesh in order to be mechaper for yourself, right, you really got ball of yumos, so you should really die for this crime. You know, this kind of negligence, watching an ox and failing to, that, and somebody dies as a result, you should, your life is worthless. But the Torah gave you a pidyon nefesh. So how much money should you be paying? If you want to be part of your nefesh, Demei Mazik. That's Shim ben Oshel, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Demei Mazik. If on the other hand I'm paying the value of the Nizak, the victim's life, what kind of payment is that? That's a compensation. So the Gemara therefore assumes that if this Brisa maintains that the Edom Zomim do not have to pay the accused Kofar, it's because this brisa is authored by Rabbi Shmuel Beno Shel Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Memela, Rabbi Osai, what's going to be the answer to that riddle? Why the Mishnah omits it? Why does the Mishnah omit Kofar? Because this Mishnah holds like the Tanakama of Rabbi Shimon that Kofar is actual mammon, it's compensation, and therefore the Edom should be paying Kofar. And that's expressed in the words, Demei Nizak. Okay, Rabbi Osai, we'll stop here. I raised this question last week, but I would like to come to some conclusion here. Are we meeting next week? You know, in the yeshiva here we have Beit Hasmana, but that doesn't have to affect our shiur. So if I know that everyone's coming, or most of the Olam is coming, then I'll certainly be here.
So whoever's coming, raise their hand.
Or whoever's not coming, raise their hand. If you can't come next week, let me know right now. If you definitely can't come. Oh, so that's not too many people. Okay, so those who can't come.
I'll go when you take.
You'll go, yeah. Okay, great. Okay, good. Thanks so much.